Good morning, and welcome back to your morning conversation right here on KXCV KRNW. I'm Jeremy Werner. Joining me this morning is Northwest Missouri State University international student from Ukraine, Vitaly Sitsig. He's joining us this morning to talk about his experiences in Ukraine, as well as what he's hearing from family and friends who are in Ukraine. I guess the first question I have is just kind of a general, how are you feeling? It's definitely a lot over the past week.
Right. It's a big mix of anger, frustration, just worried all the time. I mean, the best way to describe it is, like, imagine, it's like a really heavy breathing. It's like there's, like, a big rock in your chest, and every time you breathe, it's like, gotta take deep breath, and feels like it's like a third of what I can normally breathe. It just constantly, I'm just really heavy. For the most part, I can contain it and stay kind of focused, but it can all change, like, in a matter of seconds. Just constantly anxious, kind of shaking a little bit, but.
And so what part of Ukraine are you from, like the city and area?
So I'm from city of Lutsk, L-U-T-S-K. It's in Volyn region, V-O-L-Y-N. This is a northwestern region of Ukraine. It's bordering Belarus and Poland. So for now, we're relatively safe. However, we're really close to Belarus, and there's been some airstrikes and missiles from that area, so everybody's on a really high alert.
Okay. And have you been talking with friends and family back home? I assume you are.
Yeah, all the time.
And what are some of the things they've been telling you over the past week?
It's honestly a huge volume of information, but it really depends on the area. I've had multiple friends whose houses were just completely destroyed, and they've been asking for any help, for any just to spread the word, to asking for financial help or any other kind of help people can give them, because their apartments were destroyed by artillery strikes or missile strikes. I've had friends who joined the territorial defense forces and are staying in their cities and training to protect in case something happens. I've had so many people that are making Molotov cocktails, even like in my city, everywhere. That's all the bartenders, everybody. They're donating any glass bottles they can get, fuel, everything that they can, any cotton cloth they have, for masking nets, for all kinds of equipment that they can make. People have been covering and taking down and replacing signs pointing in different directions to confuse Russians. And it's just hard. I've had so many people that are pretty much almost living in bunkers at this point, at the in the south or north or east of Ukraine. I've had it's not per se my friend, but it's somebody my friend knows that gave birth in a subway in a bunker. It's a lot. It's just scary. But everybody is trying to do their best they can to contribute, to fight however way they can, and not panic and not lose hope and support the country any way they can.
Have you heard anything about, I guess, the number of people that stayed behind at home, because when this began, there was a flood of refugees to the borders. But in your area, like you said, there, you know, hasn't been as much as there is in Kiev or Kharkiv. Would you say there's people staying behind in the hopes that nothing comes, or maybe just kind of like we're seeing everywhere else, this pride of, you know, we're staying no matter what?
I think it's definitely a mix. First of all, there has been a lot of refugees. However, there's been a huge amount of people that decided to stay and fight, people who have never even taken up arms before. When it comes to my region specifically, a lot of people are hoping that we don't get hit as hard, since we're farther from Russia. However, I think the biggest reason is that, I mean, this is where we were born. This is where all of our everything is, all of our, you know, belongings, all of our memories, everything. So they don't want to leave. They would rather stay and do what they can.
And for people who are listening, what's your city and region like? Like, what is the landscape? Like, what is it, a lot of farm communities? Is it kind of mountainous? Like, what's the layout like?
So, my city has around 220,000 population. It's the regional capital. So, it's mostly, it's urban. However, it's not as urban as, like, Kiev would be, or Lviv, or Kharkiv, or any of those cities. It's not mountainous. It's mostly flat. We do have a lot of swampy areas to the north of us in our region. There's a lot of swamps, a lot of forest. And there definitely are a lot of farms around too, around the city. But it's kind of a mix, because there's also a lot of manufacturing plants.
And so how many of the other place, where else have you been in Ukraine, or have you always been where in your home city?
No, I've traveled around Ukraine. I've been to almost every western region. I've been to Kyiv, I've been to Crimea before the annexation in 2014. I've been to a lot of cities in the central Ukraine. I haven't traveled too much to the eastern Ukraine, but I have a lot of friends who are from there or who travel.
What
there.
Was the invasion of Crimea like in 2014 when you were there?
So I was in Crimea in, I don't remember exactly the year, but I was there in summer of like 2012 or 13 or something like that. It was before the invasion happened. But basically, we had a pro-Russian president in 2010, and we were on the brink of signing an agreement with mutual cooperation with EU, and a week before the conference where it was supposed to be signed, our president backed off and said that he's postponing it indefinitely, and was starting to look to sign a similar agreement with CSTO instead, with Russia, the Russian bloc. And a lot of students went on protest, and we called it Euromaidan. Maidan means, so our central square in Kyiv is Maidan Nezalezhnosti, which is the like square of independence. So it was called Euromaidan. And a lot of students were, it was a big peaceful protest. However, it became what we call a revolution of dignity, because they started beating people, and they started like ordering police to beat people. They put even snipers on top of the buildings and started sniping people. So we had a big revolution. More than a million people were on the streets in Kyiv, and it ended with our president fleeing to Russia. So that happened in the winter of 2013 through 2014, November through February. And there's a documentary on Netflix about it.
What are your memories of it?
I mean, I was still a very early teenager years. So it was definitely scary. I remember it was just going home, watching the news, but we all, even like in school, we try to go on our city squares with the flags and join peaceful protests, because I mean, even then we all realized that what they were doing to our people, and that is not in any way, shape or form okay, and we didn't want to grow up in a country like that. So we tried to even do like little things, like in school and things like that, like write letters to people protesting, or send any humanitarian help that we can, any medication, like anything we could. It was definitely very scary, but it wasn't the scariest part now. Since right after our president Yanukovych escaped to Rostov in Russia, we had to establish a temporary government. So our speaker, I believe, I'm not 100% sure, became the president in command until the election in May. And during that time frame, when the government was frazzled and people were very, not necessarily disorganized, but, you know, it was the aftermath of the big revolution, and it was a perfect time to attack. And that's what Russia did with Crimea. They sent their troops in. They made a referendum, and they claimed that 97 or so, a huge, I don't want to lie with the exact number, but over 90% of population voted in favor of joining Russia. And they took over all of the bases, they took over everything. When it was basically a couple of like nights, couple of days type of thing, they took over everything, and then they claimed that they weren't there. It was a peaceful referendum. People decided to join, so they let them. And that's also, that time frame is when they started funding separatists in the eastern part of Ukraine, so-called DNR and LNR, Donetsk, Luhansk National Republics, or I think that's the translation in English. Apologize if not.
I'm not quite sure. I don't know enough on that to correct you. I'm curious. There was a pundit / historian who pointed out that after 2014, there was kind of like this national embarrassment of the Russians just walking in like they owned a place. Would you say that was kind of the mood after that, of we can't let this ever happen again?
For the most part, yes. But Ukraine is a multi-ethnic country, and we have a lot of Russian-speaking population, and it's culturally always been a divide between West and East. So there's always been a conversation of whether we should stay neutral, whether we should try to get closer with Europe, or whether we should try to get closer with Russia. And on the eastern, in the eastern Ukraine, you always had more pro-Russian views, and the Western always had more pro-Europe views. However, after that, for the most part, majority of Ukraine for those 8 years were more pro-European, and you can see that with the actions of our government and with the steps we've taken with an agreement with cooperation with EU, with trade agreements, with we don't need visas to travel to EU anymore, and various things like that. So for the most part, people were trying to help our troops in the East, because for all 8 years there's been more of a proxy war happening, but around 14,000 of our soldiers died there, protecting and staying, keeping the line there. We weren't trying to take the territories back. We were trying to stay as peaceful as possible, but they always were provoking and shooting, and our troops were holding the line. Even with Minsk agreement, that we even made the concessions with Minsk agreement, saying we will give them the autonomy, those two regions. Ukraine is a unitary republic, by the way. We don't have, each state has its own constitution, can pass their own laws. Every state, every region in Ukraine is under the central government. The only exception to that rule was Crimea. Crimea was an autonomous republic as a part of Ukraine. So Crimea was closer to what states here are versus what our regions are like. So we said we will even give the autonomy to those two regions once all the Russian and Russian separatist troops are out of the land. But, I mean, it wasn't enough for them. As you can see, they decided to break the agreements and go full-scale war.
So during those 8 years, and before you came to Northwest Missouri State, did you yourself get any kind of military training?
Not per se. However, we did have a military class in high school that was mandatory. So that's where I learned different, learned how to shoot a rifle. I learned how to completely disassemble, put back together a rifle. I learned how the translation is hard when it comes to specifics, but different stances and different, like throwing grenades and going under the, specific, I'm not sure what they're called, but like a course with something to climb, like under the net or like jump over things, stuff like that. So it's been kind of like a preparatory class, I guess, but not like full scale.
Okay. And right now, kind of the heroic figure around the world is President Zelensky. What are your feelings about him currently as, you know, everything goes on?
I mean, he definitely rallied the country right now, and I think he's doing a fantastic job. And coming from me, I did not support him in his election.
I was actually going to ask that if you supported him.
I did not support him because there was a... I mean, he has a law degree, but for the most of his life, he was a comedian. And there was a show before the election for a couple of years. It was called Servant of the Country, or Servant of the Nation, where he played the role of the president, who was an ordinary history teacher and who became president after a viral video going and defeating all of the oligarchs-backed candidates. And to me, it just felt like he wasn't competent enough. But I can tell you right now, he earned my respect just with his actions right now, with how he's portraying himself, with the decisions he's making. Entire country is behind him. And actually, they released one of our rating, our agency called Rating. They do polls. They released numbers that 91% of Ukrainians right now are backing him. And I think that the number will only grow if it continues in this way.
And so since this all kind of began, I'm sure through, you know, digital means you've been checking in on the news sources you have overseas, but I'm sure you've been, you know, keeping up with what American media outlets are saying. Is there anything that you find odd we're not reporting on that you've seen or heard, or something that maybe in terms of translating what's going on there that Americans are getting wrong about the situation?
One big thing that I'm noticing is the American prism on the news is no matter which news outlet, most news outlets are trying to tie U.S. politics into this, which is very insensitive in my, if I'm to say so myself. Seeing news trying to claim that this would have never happened under Trump, or that this would have, or Trump would have only made it worse, or any opinion you want to tell on it, claiming that U.S. is the, could have prevented this, or U.S. did too much, or anything like that. It's just so disheartening because, I mean, it's been happening for 8 years now, not at this scale, for sure, and nobody thought, everybody hoped that this would never happen. But right now, people are dying. Civilians are dying. Hospitals are being bombed. Kindergartens are being bombed. And seeing people bickering about political ratings right now, about who should be, who can handle this better, just seems very insensitive to me. Because it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who is the president right now or who's doing what right now. The main thing is to unite in the stance, because they're threatening nuclear war to the world. You can't afford to be divided right now. And seeing that prism is disheartening.
So when you I don't know how many people you've talked to in America about this, but have you encountered many who were just completely ignorant or don't care about this?
I have. Are you talking about for my last, I'm a senior, so my last 3-4 years, or are you here, or are you talking about?
Oh, just within current? Like, yeah, okay. Just within the past. I guess I have to admit, as an American, I know most of my fellow countrymen don't know anything about this over the past 3 right. 4 years. I can gladly admit and take responsibility for that. But you know, in the past week, have you encountered anybody who's like, I don't, you know, they don't seem to know or care about what's going on?
I have so many people that were just saying, why should we care? We should stay out of it, which I'll go to it later. But those types of statements, different jokes about, and I laugh at some jokes too, because it's just so stressful. You gotta have humor a little bit. But jokes about, all right, I'm gonna have to step in, or things like that, feel free. We opened foreign legions. The United States is allowing citizens to go fight. If you want to step in, you're very much welcome to. And things like that. However, every day, I think the number of those people goes down, which definitely makes me feel much better.
I guess this is the logical next question, but what would you be doing if you were in Ukraine right now?
I would join my local, sorry, translation, Territorial Defense Forces, which are basically civilians who can go sign up. You only need your passport. They're training you, they're giving you weapons, they're giving you ammunition, they're giving you the uniforms, everything, and they train you on how to defend if the army, if the enemy breaches and goes to your city. I haven't been drafted, since I'm studying, and if you're studying, you're not undergoing the draft. So I wouldn't join the proper military, as I would just be a burden, since I'm not, I don't know everything, but I would definitely join my city's Territorial Defense Force and try to do my best to defend the city I lived pretty much most of my life in.
Now, has there been movement amongst people in your hometown to other cities where there is a lot more intense fighting?
There's been a lot of volunteers for sure, but for the most part, civilians are trying, and the Territorial Defense Forces are staying where they are at to protect the enemy from making a surprise advancements, especially since we're on the border with Belarus, and Belarus has been sending airstrikes and missiles from Belarus territory into Ukraine for the last day or more. They actually yesterday had the referendum well, it wasn't very legitimate, same as their last election, but the referendum that allowed them to, they, one of the points of that referendum was changing Belarus' constitution to not be an, to become a nuclear nation, basically. So that would allow them to host Russian nukes in Belarus, close to our border. And after that referendum, their aggression from Belarus' side increased significantly. So for the most part, people in my town, in my city, are trying to stay in my city and, you know, blog post everything, just make everything prepare for a possible full-scale invasion, since as of right now it's mostly just air sirens going off about potential strikes and strikes in my region on like different military facilities and things like that. So for the most of and definitely taking care of refugees if some refugees are coming into the city.
All this information that you get, just so I guess people out there know, what is it that you rely on for information you know is, you know, factual about the war? Because it's so hard to update what's going on, because there are so many rumors and disinformation out there.
Right. So I'm mostly relying on official Ukrainian government sources that I definitely get information from local journalists and local press. Like Kyiv Independent, for example, and other news outlets. However, I'm more inclined to trust official sources, official governmental sources. They're updating and they're reposting things that the media posts that are actually true. And for the most part, I'm keeping track. I'm using Telegram. There's a lot of Ukrainian, like our legislative body, our office of president, our the communications department, mm-hmm. per se, have their official channels there. Also Twitter, Instagram. I'm just trying to stay that way. Plus definitely all of my friends who live in the cities that are currently being invaded.
Do you know anybody who's currently on the ground in Kyiv?
In Kyiv?
Kyiv, sorry.
I know a lot of people who are in Kyiv, who live there, who are hiding there right now or in the civil territorial defense. I don't know necessarily of any military. However, they're urging people not to disclose any Ukrainian military mm-hmm. movements, not to post any videos of Ukrainian military movements, not to disclose any information of their whereabouts or any specific individuals. So that part I do not know.
What kind of support have you gotten here from, you know, people in the Maryville community or people on campus since the invasion?
I've had several people reach out to me and ask me if I need anything and with the support and saying they're praying. I've had Erica from International Center reach out to me. I've had the Vice President of Student Affairs reach out to me. However, that's pretty much it when it comes to the like official.
Okay.
I've definitely had multiple friends and from here that talk to me, but
so for, you know, I don't want to theorize that anyone's going to run into you and immediately know who you are, but you know, for people who do want to help or do anything, do you have any recommendations for what, you know, maybe I myself, people in the campus community, Americans in general, what is it that, you know, we can do to help?
There's multiple things. First of all, for sure, spread information about the invasion. This is not a crisis in Ukraine. There's no crisis. There's a war that was declared by Russia without any justification. They're claiming that they want to quote unquote denazify Ukraine and quote unquote demilitarize Ukraine, when our president has Jewish roots. Even that doesn't add up whatsoever. and just spread the information, talk about the war crimes that Russia is doing, and make sure people know and people understand why it's important. Also, you can donate to several. There's a lot of different NGOs that are supporting sending humanitarian aid. There's the official account that our national bank made to support our military specifically, if that's what you want to do. Just try to donate. Try to donate. Buy local Ukrainian products. Don't fund Russian army. Don't buy Russian manufactured products. And just reach out to your representatives. Reach out to any officials, asking them to be harsh on Russia, to isolate Russia from the rest of the world right now, to close U.S. sky. At the moment, I know it will update, everything updates very fast, but at the moment, around 32 countries closed their skies to Russia, and the United States is not one of them. Just put pressure on the officials to actually keep pushing and show Russia that this is, they can't keep doing it.
Those are all the questions I have. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I want to say that, I mean, first of all, every Ukrainian is grateful for the international community and all the help that we're getting right now. All of the money that we're getting, financial aid, humanitarian aid, all of the sanctions imposed, military aid sent. But I also want to urge to not... To keep supporting Ukraine, because this is not even a donation. Ukraine right now is protecting the rest of Europe, protecting NATO against Russia. Russia threatened already Finland and Sweden when both of them said that after the Russian invasion of Ukraine, they're strongly considering joining NATO, and Russia's directly threatening them. Russia threatened the whole world with pretty much nuclear war. So this is a part that you can do to help in the fight. And we're all very grateful, but we wanna ask to not treat it as a one-time thing and forget and move on. I also want to say that despite everyone being scared, despite everyone being really worried, Ukrainian people are not giving up. Ukrainian people are dealing devastating damages to Russian military right now. There's been over 5,300 Russian troops already dead. There's been over 400 captured at least. There's been around 700 or 800 of their armored vehicles that were destroyed, over 160 or so, maybe even more than 200 now. It updates every, you know, very, very fast. Their tanks are down. So our military is pushing back, but they haven't been able to capture a single regional capital yet. And they're getting desperate. They're bombing hospitals, they're bombing kindergartens, they're bombing, they bombed an like an oil farm where they keep all of the oil. That's an environmental catastrophe. They try to bomb our place of where the nuclear waste is in Kyiv. They barely missed and hit a building right next to it, I believe, or the outskirts of that building somewhere. So no radiation was able to escape. However, all of these are, they're getting desperate. All of these are war crimes. And people understand that, and people are just mobilizing and trying to push back even more. And you've seen, I mean, it's spreading everywhere, kind of like fire videos of, we had a Ukrainian woman who went to a Russian soldier that was occupying her city and told them to place sunflower seeds in his pockets so when he dies, they would grow. From like in Ukraine, it's sunflower seed. Sunflower is the national flower of Ukraine. There's been videos of civilians chasing Russian military that was running away and capturing them. There's been videos of Ukrainians stealing a tank when they were looking for fuel and towing it with a tractor. There's been videos of people stopping tanks without any weapons. People just one state is in a big column and basically telling, if you want to proceed, you're going to have to run over all of us. There's been one of our soldiers blew up a bridge with himself on it just so Russians wouldn't be able to cross Dnipro River. Dnipro River is the biggest river in Ukraine. It's basically dividing Ukraine in half. It's going through the entire Ukraine. It's around the size, when it comes to like the width, it's definitely like Missouri River, Mississippi River type of scale. So that bridge was very important for them. There's been 13 of our I believe it was Border Patrol that was on the Snake Island in Black Sea, that when asked to, after bombing entire island from Russian warships, they were asked to surrender and lay down their arms or they will be killed. And they, I don't think I can cuss, but basically they told them to F off before getting killed, most likely. There's some reports that they might be alive, but there's no proof, so they're assumed dead, at least as of right now. So people are resisting strong, and nobody's losing hope, nobody's losing faith. But the world has to hold Russia accountable for this right now. This is, I mean, who would have thought that in 21st century there is going to be an open war like this? This is the biggest war in Europe since World War II. This is crazy. So, yeah. And just last thing, after the collapse of USSR in 1991, Ukraine was third world's largest country with the largest nuclear arsenal after Russia and the United States, in whichever order they were at the time. We gave up all of our nuclear weapons in 1994 and signed a Budapest Memorandum that was signed between Russia, United States, and United Kingdom. We gave up all of our nuclear weapons in exchange of guarantees from those three nations that they will protect our sovereignty and our borders, our territorial integrity. Well, as you can see, Russia is actively invading Ukraine right now. And when I hear people saying, we're not obligated by in any way, shape, or form, I just want to say that United States did sign that agreement. So I'm in no way, shape, or form trying to promote or hope for, you know, World War III. Not at all. But we need help. We need more military aid. We need financial aid. We need humanitarian aid. There's so many people that are left without their homes, that are left without food, that are injured, that it's awful. It's beyond awful, and I can't even begin to describe how I feel. But yeah, if you don't care as a human, if people going through this doesn't invoke any sort of empathy in you, at least know that the United States did agree to protect Ukraine, at least legally.
So this is something that sometimes happens. After I say I'm out of questions, I think of another question. But if you could say, I don't want to say one thing because I feel like it'd be actually a lot, but if you could say something to Vladimir Putin right now, knowing that he would hear what you had to say, what would you say?
Sorry, I'm thinking how to phrase it properly.
A lot of swear words?
Yeah, so I'm trying to put it into that.
Mm-hmm.
I would tell him to I mean, obviously, immediately stop the war and withdraw all troops, because I think he's afraid. I think he's afraid that he's losing. I think he's afraid that he didn't expect this kind of response from Ukraine, and he didn't expect this kind of response from the world. And just give up before it's too late, because you're not invincible. And if you look at all dictators in the world before him, all of them met their end. And he's not going to be an exception if he keeps it up. Just, he's hurting his own people. He's hurting Russia. He's hurting Russian image in the world. He's hurting Russian civilians. And yeah, everything else is just a lot of swear words.
Once again, that was Northwest International student from Ukraine, Vitaly Sitsig. You can also listen to our morning conversation with Northwest professor Dr. Brian Hess, who specializes in geopolitics, if you're looking for a more kind of broad approach to the Russian invasion of Ukraine. I'm Jeremy Werner, and this has been your morning conversation right here on KXCV KRNW.